We're in the great Sermon on the Mount, a message that Jesus preached early in his earthly ministry to a large crowd of people that included both his disciples as well as the Jewish religious groups known as the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the Essenes, and of course the Zealots were there among them as well. The reach of this message not only includes all that were assembled that day, but frankly, to us gathered here this morning. This point in the sermon, the Lord is emphasizing certain laws of the Old Testament that reveal how that all of humanity is equally guilty of sin before God. Now, why is that important? Because the religious crowd had only emphasized the external behaviors of the law as being important, while ignoring the internal issues of the heart. That, of course, had led to living lives of hypocrisy and self-righteousness. For example, the religious crowd believed that they had earned God's favor when they had never physically murdered another individual. Jesus brought this up in the preceding verses. But then Jesus says you are already guilty of murder when you become angry with someone in your heart. They had thought favor with God is only what they do on the outside. Jesus says no, it begins on the inside. Another example that they had shared is that the Pharisees, a religious crowd, they had believed that they had earned God's favor by never physically committing adultery. But Jesus says you are already guilty of adultery when you have lust in your heart for one who is not your spouse. These examples that Jesus is giving is to show their need for the righteousness of Christ that is available through the gift of God's grace. That salvation, redemption is an issue of the heart and not just a matter of outward conformity. In other words, we cannot be redeemed of sin by just changing the outside. No, it's what happens on the inside, because what is a greater problem than the exterior of our lives, what people see, is what is going on in the depths of our heart. So Jesus says, you may have never committed physical adultery, but if you've lusted after a woman, you're guilty of adultery. You may have never taken someone's life physically, but if you hate them, you're guilty of murdering them. Showing us that sin is not just what we do or change on the outside, it's who we are. So he moves now to another example to show this same point. And the example is one we might think, we might not think of very often, but it's certainly the fruit of a person's new nature in Christ. And that is a life of integrity. And the facet of integrity that Jesus addresses here is the oaths that one makes. So let's talk about oaths for just a moment. What is an oath? What is the context of by which Jesus is affirming or denying this issue? Well, in its base understanding, an oath is a simple vow or promise. But in a formal way, or sometimes even informal, an oath can be ensured by the one making the promise, the means of swearing, particularly swearing to someone or swearing on something. I mean, this ritual is something that we even did as children. You know what we called it? We called it the pinky promise. And someone might say something to us, and what is our response? Pinky promise? And so we would take one pinky, and they would take the other pinky, and by the pinky promise, what were we doing? We were swearing on what we said, that what we said is actually true. And when the promise wasn't kept, what did we say? You pinky promise. What do you mean? What do you mean it's not true? Well, as adults, much hasn't changed. People will say things like, I swear on my mother's grave that such and such is true. or I swear to God that I won't lie to you. It's the act of invoking something or someone that we would never want to be dishonorable to in order to prove that we are not being dishonorable to you. We have examples of these in our society, formally and informally. Formally, we think about the presidential oaths that are used to swear in a new president by the traditional act of placing a hand on the Bible and ending their pledge with the phrase, "So help me God." In court, there is the legal proceedings that begin with an oath as they stand, and if you've served in a jury or whatever the case may be, you put your hand on the Bible and you repeat, "I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God." These are formal oaths by which we say, not only take my word for it, okay, but I am proving to you, based upon this oath, this swear, this pinky promise, that what I'm saying is true. So, what's the issue? All right? That's the question. Why is this even a matter of discussion? And after Jared's marathon sermon last Sunday, you'll be happy to know that I only have 2 points. Here is the first one, all right? Number one. It's an issue because, first of all, our sin nature fosters a culture of dishonesty. That's the first point. Our sin nature fosters a culture of dishonesty. Now, let's just make something clear right here at the beginning. The issue is not so much making an oath. Jesus even tells us here in verse 33, do you see it in your Bibles? He tells them to perform unto the Lord thine oaths. He's telling them to keep their oaths. So when we make a vow at the marriage altar, keep the vow. When we pledge allegiance as a citizen, keep the pledge. When we promise to uphold responsibilities that have been given to our trust, keep the promise. When we commit to honor the Lord in a certain area, keep the commitment. So let's go ahead and understand this. The oath is not the problem. We are the problem. Our sin nature indeed fosters a culture of dishonesty in our life. Think back to the illustration that I gave you a moment ago as we pinky promise as children. Why is it that we have the need to even extend a pinky promise when stating a fact? Because while one hand's pinky is extended forward to our friend, how often do we take the other hand, put it behind our back, and, you see what I'm doing? Cross our fingers, right? So the pinky promise means nothing, because when I don't keep the promise and you say, "Well, you pinky promised," yeah, but I was crossing my fingers. We're always finding loopholes out of it. Even as children, our sin nature produced in us a trait of deception and dishonesty. And that is why we live in such a deceitful world. And think about it. Truth is so scarce that nearly all of us are suspect to what is being said around us and to us. So much of politics, well, especially politics, but not only politics, there is certainly religion, corporations, businesses, governments, even families are dominated by manipulation and deceit, that we live and work with people around us not really knowing who we can trust. Always questioning whether or not what they're saying to me is truth. Will they keep their promise? Did they mean what they say? Are their fingers crossed? This shouldn't surprise us, however. Because the one who's leading this unholy culture is described by Jesus himself as the father of all lies. That's what Jesus said about Satan in John chapter 8. That he is the father of all lies. Satan has been lying since the beginning, and every word he spews out of his mouth is filled with deception. So it should not surprise us that this world system that he dominates will be filled with dishonesty on every corner. And his children will certainly, by nature, be people of dishonesty. This is why Jesus points us back to the law in verse 33. Look at it again, verse 33. "Ye have heard that it has been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself." This is a reference to Leviticus 19, Numbers 30, Deuteronomy 23. There are several passages in the Old Testament law which in summary states, do not break your oaths. Don't break them. Of course, Jesus then says next in verse 34, "Swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, neither shalt thou swear by thy head." Again, this is not a statement against oaths altogether. I do not believe that what Jesus is saying here is that he doesn't want us to take an oath in a courtroom. Now, some believe that. My recent venture of jury duty, which I was highly disappointed that I was selected juror number one. And when they found out I was a pastor, they dismissed me. I was very disappointed by that. I heard for hours what had happened. I wanted to know what the end result was going to be. I wanted to be a part of the end result. But I noticed that before we took our oath to tell the truth and nothing but the truth, that the sheriff said, "Now, for religious reasons, if you don't want to put your hand on the Bible, you don't have to, just stand there and hold your right hand." And there were some who did it because they believe that this is a wooden law, that Jesus is strictly saying that no time should you ever make a pledge or an oath or swear on anything. Now, I don't believe that's what Jesus is saying here. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't pledge allegiance to a country or take an oath in a courtroom. Or I don't think it says you shouldn't teach your children or allow your children to make a pinky promise. Scripture even indicates that God himself took an oath. As well, you'll find throughout the scriptures that both prophets and early church leaders made oaths. I mean, Jesus himself would say things like this, "Truly, truly, I say unto you." Those words, "truly, truly," was just his way of saying, "Listen, what I'm telling you is true." He's making an oath. He's indicating the truth of his word. Then why would Jesus say this? Because here's the point. He's saying this: don't make promises you never intend to keep. Don't speak things you know are not true. Don't use words meant to deceive. It's called integrity. Because here's what the Pharisees especially would do. They would use the oath as a guise to build a false trust with others or to simply mislead them about their internal realities and motives. And so rashly they swore on anything and everything. As we see Jesus saying here, they swore on heaven. They swore on God's throne. They swore on the earth. They swore on the city of Jerusalem, even themselves. It was their attempt to get away with lying and deception. Because in their hearts, just like all of us, our sin nature leads us to be deceptive. And so when they wanted to convince others that their word could be honored, what do? They pinky promised. Because when you pinky promise, everybody's going to know that what you're saying is absolute truth. But as the Pharisees were pinky promising, their fingers were always crossed behind their back. And in the end, it didn't matter what they said. It didn't matter who they swore to. It made no difference what oath they offered. At the end of the day, as we see in our lives and in our world, they're going to do what's best for them. And that's the problem. The issue at hand by which Jesus is addressing is truthfulness. Integrity. And according to verse 37, anything that is not of truth comes from a heart of evil. Do you see that there? Look at verse 37. Let your communication be yes, yes, no, no. For whatsoever is more than these, whatsoever is not of truth is evil. Why? Because our sin nature fosters a culture of dishonesty. It's why we don't have to teach our children to lie. It's the nature within them. And when you look at them, Ellie, and she's got cookie crumbs all over her lips, and her hands are behind her back. Ellie, did you get that cookie? Come on. Even at the youngest age, nobody has to learn how to lie. We just do it. It's because of our nature. That's what Jesus is trying to pull out of them. That liars are, it's who we are. Dishonesty is how we were born. You don't have enough righteousness on your own to change that about you. You need someone who can change that for you. Which leads me to the second, and this is pretty good to say at 10:55. My final point. Hey, I'm going to La Unica. I didn't have enough Mexican last week. I had to get some more today. But point number one. Our sin nature fosters a culture of dishonesty. But point number two, the gospel builds believers into people of integrity. The gospel builds believers into people of integrity. Now, I think you would agree with me that Jesus is the Lord of truth. According to John chapter 14, He is truth. He said of His own testimony, I am the way, I am the truth. I'm not a truth, I am the truth. In John chapter 17, He tells us that His Word is truth. We don't have to doubt whether or not His words are relevant. They are relevant. They are absolute. They are true. Jesus is true. His Word is true. Colossians 1, His gospel is truth. 1 Thessalonians 1, we are learning that His entire essence is true. Jesus is the Lord of truth. You see, when we come to the gospel of Jesus Christ, we are coming to what is true. We're not coming to something that we hope to be true. We are coming to that which is true. The gospel message of Christ, that He died, that He was buried, that He rose again for those who will follow Him. It is not a subjective truth. It is an absolute truth. When we read and are reminded of, when we think on the gospel, there is no hint of deception in it. Not one ounce of deceit or manipulation. Everything about Jesus and His gospel is absolute truth. So it's only natural that the Lord of truth would build His followers to be people of truth. Remember, Jesus is pointing this out so that they would see the deceit of their hearts and turn to Christ as the true Son of God, who is the only truth that can change them. And that's what happens. We hear the truth, we believe the truth, we follow the truth, we become changed by the truth. And I believe those are theologically in sequence for a reason, because if you're not being changed by the truth, you're not following the truth. And if you're not following the truth, you don't believe the truth. And if you don't believe the truth, perhaps it's because you've never heard the truth. Consider three principles of truth that we see right here in this text that the gospel of Christ is building in us, that we might be people of integrity. It doesn't mean that when we come to Christ and follow Him that we're not going to be tempted at times to be dishonest. It doesn't even mean that we're going to be perfectly changed into one of these goody two-shoes that never once slips up and manipulates. But our life is going to be changed. And there's going to be some integrity built within us that the difference will certainly be there. Three things, and I'm just going to give these in applicable statements. Number one, don't guarantee what you cannot control. You want to be a person of integrity, a person of truthfulness, one that is patterned after the gospel of Jesus Christ, then don't guarantee what you cannot control. Here's another way to think about it. God is sovereign and I am not. That's very important to remember. God is sovereign and I am not. He is in control of all things and I am not. But look at what he says in verse 36. Don't swear by your head because you can't make one hair white or black. In other words, swearing by something in this case or promising something that we have absolute no control over is a form of dishonesty. He said, you don't have the ability to change a white hair into a black hair. That is, unless you go to a beauty salon. Or if you shop at Sally's, perhaps you can. But listen to me. The point being made here is that we have no power or ability in ourselves to take control of anything. And the gospel of truth teaches us that although there are some things that we hope transpires, only God has the ultimate power to control the outcome. I hope my teams win their championships, but I have no control over that. I hope I can live a healthy life. I have no control over that. I would like the tornadoes to go a different direction so that we can come together tonight and do what we plan to do, but I have no control over that. So why am I going to guarantee something that I have no control over? And that's a part of the problem. Is we make promises we can't keep. We guarantee things that we're not in control of. And it's just another form of deception. If you know you don't have the power to change the color of your hair, don't say that you can. I mean, look at us, some of us who are losing our hair. Don't you think if they had the power to grow it, they would have done it by now? I'm not pointing anybody out or anything. So don't guarantee what you cannot control. Here's the second statement. When you speak truth and stay true. When you speak truth and stay true. Look at verse 33. It says, perform unto the Lord thine oaths. Again in verse 37, let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. It's simple, really. Let your yes be yes, your no be no. So what Jesus is saying here is say what you mean and mean what you say. That when you speak truth. And when you speak truth, stay true. We see this later in James's epistle. James chapter 5 verse 12 says this, but above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath. But let your yea be yea, your nay, nay, lest ye fall into condemnation. When you speak truth and stay true. So we come back to this idea that when a believer speaks, the swearing on an oath shouldn't even be necessary. That's what he's saying. That someone believing a Christian shouldn't depend upon a pinky promise or a hand on the Bible or a pledge. But why should I have to say, now I'm being honest with you. I mean, is there ever a time I'm not honest with you? But listen to me, if I'm lying, I'm dying. I mean, why do we have to even preface that? Are there times that we do lie? Well, frankly, what he's saying is there shouldn't be. There shouldn't be times that we're deceptive. There shouldn't be times that we're in the manipulation. We shouldn't have to swear on God or mother's grave or put a hand on a Bible in order for somebody to believe us. No, there should be so much honesty and sincerity in our speech that we may be trusted by our bare word without even having to swear an oath. That's how honest a follower of Christ should live. And according to Jesus, the work of the gospel in our hearts conforms us into that pattern. Listen, my sin nature makes me deceptive, but the gospel of Jesus Christ helps me to live a life of integrity. being careful next time that I promise something I can't control. And being careful next time I speak, that I am slow to speak, to make sure that what I'm saying is true and that what I'm saying I will maintain is true, that I will keep it, that I will be committed to it. And then the third thing here is simply a summary of what Jesus is saying, and it's this. May all your dealings be without deception or trickery. May all your dealings be without deception or trickery. Again, we come back to verse 37 because this is a wonderful summary and it's used again throughout the rest of the New Testament. Let your communication be yes, yes, no, no, for whatsoever is more than these cometh evil. And that brings us back to the integrity crisis that Jesus addresses. The evil, the hypocrisy of using oaths to cover up lies. That whole hand on the Bible, especially in political venues, always causes me to laugh. It's as if magically in that moment, like when we were kids and we put our books underneath our pillows at night, hoping that somehow mystically when we went to sleep, all the knowledge in that book would transform into our minds and we'd wake up the next morning ready to ace the test that we haven't even read. These politicians get up there and they never even really cracked open a Bible. And all of a sudden, on the day of their inauguration, they put their hand on it and we automatically believe they're going to be true to their word. Yeah, right. Yeah, right. That's what they were doing, the Pharisees. But let's not think of others today. Let's think about us. Okay, let's put the mirror in front of our faces for a moment. How guilty are we at times of slanting our stories to make them more glamorous? You know, that fish that was that big, 3 years later is now this big. And then 10 years after that, it's so big that you can't even put it on the wall anymore. I don't know where it went. It's huge. Or how often do we manipulate to get the wanted result? Or to deceive into winning a favor? And that doesn't always have to be where we work. That's where we live. Perhaps manipulating our own children. Deceiving our own spouses. Perhaps there's been times that you and me have flat out used trickery to get what we wanted. It's why the small print is small print. In hopes that you don't see the small print. Because then again, if we were honest with you about everything, then you wouldn't buy it. Convicting, isn't it? The point Jesus makes is clear. Whatsoever is not true is evil. Period. These things are not becoming of a child of God. There's only one way we will be careful to live in integrity and speak in truthfulness and genuine ways, and that's by following the truth. You see, it's the deceit of our hearts that show us our guilt before God and our great need for His truth in our lives. And it's this faith and this truth that will transform us into people of integrity, people of truthfulness. And what may seem something as so light, especially comparatively to the other examples that Jesus has used in the sermons, the examples of murder and adultery, and now we get to this whole thing of an oath. What is the big deal? It's just another step in this journey to show us our need for Christ. That while we walk around thinking that morally, even religiously, that we're pretty upright, honest people, in the end, Jesus proves to us once more that by our nature, we are entirely deceptive people. And that until we follow Christ and Christ alone, there is no truth within us. We need Jesus to know truth and to live truth. And that's the point. Jesus is not teaching us this lesson today so that we'll walk around on pins and needles, making sure that we read every small print and being sure in all of our business dealings that we're careful and all these kinds of things. I think that's a part of it. We need to live integrity, pure, moral, upbringing, wise. But the bottom line, he's trying to show us how much we need him. Because without him, we're on a road to destruction. We need Jesus because we can't do it on our own. And that's the beauty of the Passion Week. That's why as we see Jesus riding on a donkey into Jerusalem today, as they thought an earthly king was arriving, they had no idea that by the end of the week, their so-called earthly king would be nailed to a cross. And only a few people would remain at the foot of that cross. The ones crying Hosanna today, a week later, are going to be crying, I thought he was the one. Obviously, he's not. But he was the one. And he is the one. And what he did not come to this earth to do is to make things politically better. He came to this earth to make us eternally reconciled with God. To show us our need for him, and without him, without his cross, without his resurrection, nothing good in us will ever merit his favor. So you know what we have to do? God, I'm a liar. I mean, I lie every sentence of the day, but I'm prone to deception and hypocrisy and manipulation and deceit. And I realize that on my own, that that in of itself shows my guilt before you. I need you. I want you. I believe in you. I follow you. I'm trusting in your righteousness to do that what my righteousness can never accomplish. And some of them, as we'll see in weeks, they were getting that message. It is why they'll later forsake all and follow him. Because they realize that it's not about their righteousness. It's about his righteousness. And when his righteousness comes in, his righteousness begins to shine out. The truth produces the truth. And when the truth is not being produced, when the truth is not being produced, perhaps it's because the truth has never been received. It's a strong word of conviction. But it's once again the reminder that we need above all not to try harder this week. What we need is the grace of a loving God. Do you have that grace? Because if you don't have that grace, then you're going to make some statements today with some figurative fingers crossed, and it not faze you one bit. May God help us to live lives of integrity that only happen by receiving the righteousness of Jesus Christ.